Hello, it's Kirsty here, and welcome to Season 3, Episode 5 of The Two Fat Expats. And why are we fat expats? Well, because this podcast is all about living a fat expat life. It's about making the most of it and filling your expat life to the brim. I'm in Doha, Qatar this week, and Nikki is in Hamburg, Germany. And this episode, we're talking about the book Diplomatic Incidents. We've read Cherry Denman's book, which discusses her very undiplomatic life. And we've got you, our lovely listeners and readers, to tell us about a few of your own diplomatic incidents. We'll also reveal the next big fat expat book choice for our book group. And we're going to have a bit of a giggle about what we've seen on social media this week, what we're reading, what we're watching, what's popped up in our feeds. So let's get cracking, shall we? Let's go and say hello to serial expat Nikki Moffat.
Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. How are you? Although I think we both have a little bit of a cold still.
Yes. Oh, I have had the most shocker head cold thanks to my children. I think it's been through everyone and it's just got to me at the end. And I'm actually feeling a little bit of guilt because I think I did make everyone go to school throughout all of it. And I had to have a day in bed yesterday. Well, I was actually sent back to bed by my husband because I was just so revolting.
Oh, you're the person the school nurse hates. Don't see
And have you still got that cough? Because you've had the Hamburg hack for the last 10 weeks.
I have, and it's still there, but it's fading. So I'm going with it's going. So hopefully by next week I'll be hack and snot free. That's my aim.
Yes. And how is the move in Hamburg?
Well, it's good. There was a couple of surprises this week. One thing that happened this week was we got all our paintings up on the wall, which was very exciting. We now also have a shower screen, so that's super good. So I don't have to mop the bathroom twice a day. And I also went to have my driver's license eye test, which is basically a straightforward thing where you look through a device and you tell the optometrist where the holes are in the circle. The problem with that is I get my left and right mixed up, so I was already panicking when I started to look into the thing. And so I'm putting my arms out and waving them around, showing him where everything is, and he said, actually, you failed. So you have a problem with your eyesight and now you'll be needing glasses to drive. So that's my week to date.
Do you know when I went for my last eye test in Australia, I put my eyes in the little machine, started reading out a few letters and numbers, and then he stopped and said, "Did you drive here?" with that exact tone of alarm. And it turned out, yes, I was very, very blind and deliriously unaware of it. I have to have glasses to see long distances. But both of my parents got glasses when they were sort of 40.
Obviously, my eyes are in the post-40 stage, but the long distance thing's a bit freaky. I said, "Did my husband pass this?" And he said...
Because it's a competition.
Yes. He said, "Yes, but he was wearing his glasses." I said, "Oh." So good news, we're driving to Amsterdam tomorrow. It's my kids' midterm break. I don't know how that happened so quickly. We're going to the Netherlands for a few days, as you do when you're in Europe. And I said to my husband, "Well, I'm sorry, I can't drive."
So how long will it take you to drive from Germany to Amsterdam?
Well, Google Maps says 4 hours, 35 minutes from Hamburg to Amsterdam. But I've been told that Google Maps is fibbing, because the roads are incredibly notoriously filled with accidents and roadworks, and it definitely takes a bit longer. So we're just going to see. We're not in a rush. We're just going to turn up and see how long it takes. So I'll be able to report back next week.
How lucky are you, though? Like how, I mean, are you thinking that right now? Are you thinking, this is amazing, I am now living in Europe and able to drive from one country to another in the space of 4 hours if I wish?
No, we do feel incredibly lucky, and that's why we want to go somewhere and take advantage of it. Yeah. My kids are like, "No, we want to stay here." I'm like, "Really? Let's go. Let's do something." My daughter said, "All you want to do is for us to look at statues and go to museums." I said, "No, not at all."
No, we want to smoke pot and see prostitutes as well, kids.
But yesterday, I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, I'm checking things that are child-friendly to do in Amsterdam. I'm looking for amusement park.
Oh, good for her. Oh, well, maybe if anyone knows of great child-friendly things to do, they can let us know at twofatexpats.com and they can tell you, Nikki, what you should be doing when you're exactly in right. Amsterdam, other than eating hash brownies and because, I mean, that is the standard response, isn't it, for what people think you're doing when you go to Amsterdam. Yes. Now, I'm not sure if you can hear the mosque in the background, if anyone's wondering what that murmur is, but I've got the windows open because we're just making that change in Doha from 45-degree heat every day to a very manageable, you know, kind of 30s, low 30s, and it's beautiful. Like, I do not have an air conditioner on and I have windows open, and you know, we're just about to hit the peak of our braggy time in the Middle East, where we remember why it is so lovely at this time of year. But yes, apologies to anyone if they hear too much noise or whatever in the background. That's my fault.
How long does that last for? How many months do you have open windows?
It will last until about March, and the window's not always open because we'll still have dust storms, but today is not one of those days. But, yeah, the temperature, the thing that you don't often hear about from the Middle East is that once we get to sort of mid-October, really through up until end of March, it's beautiful here. It is like Australia heading into summer. Do you know, it's just beautiful, stunning, stunning.
Do you have cooler evenings and mornings, or is it just
same? Yeah, it will. It will get, once we get to sort of January, it'll be quite cool in the mornings. We've never had a heater here, but I do know some people who have, you know, radiators that they'll turn on at that time of year, but we've never kind of been that drastic. But it's gorgeous. I love this time of year, and you just spend all of your time outside. It's fantastic. Okay, so shall we get back to what we're meant to be talking about this week? So we had chosen the book Diplomatic Incidents by Sherry Denman, and we've spent the last 4 to 5 weeks reading it. Well, some of us, Nikki, have spent the last 4 to 5 weeks. Others did it in a few days. We came across the book. I had been given the book by a friend a couple of years ago, and it had been sitting around for ages and I hadn't picked it up. It was a very easy, simple read, as in it wasn't a big book. It was more just each chapter was kind of a different scenario of expat life, wasn't it?
Well, yes, but I also found it very choppy. I found it very, like, it didn't feel like a continuous flow to me, even
no.
within the chapters. That's why I struggled reading it, I think. I mean, I enjoyed the paragraphs and the mini anecdotes within a few paragraphs, but I kind of feel, I don't know, it was a bit choppy, but I did enjoy it. But I think that's my excuse why I didn't read it so quickly.
Yeah, I think it was definitely very, very choppy. And as someone who, because I have put together a chapter outline of what I would write for an expat book.
I
say what would, you say what will. And I remember when I was going through ideas of how to write, I remember one of my ideas at one stage was a what to pack kind of chapter each time, but then I didn't like that either, because it is that thing, when you're just telling anecdotal stories. I mean, what Cherry has done in the book is she's broken it up into different things. Like, she had Christmas, didn't she? And she had a guest coming to stay, and she had
birthday parties, entertaining. She had Yes, dinner yeah. parties, I guess.
I thought it was a really good giggle in parts. Like, I loved the Orson Welles quote when Orson Welles had said, there are only two emotions on an aeroplane, boredom and terror. And I thought that was very, very good. But I found with Cherry, I couldn't relate a lot of the time, which is bizarre because I have travelled for 16 years and we've lived in a couple of similar locations. Yeah. But I, do you know, when I was first given the book, I remember picking up and reading chapter one and putting it down, and I made an assumption that the book was written a long, long time ago, that it was written, you know, in that someone who'd been an expat sort of 15 years ago. So I was really surprised that it was such a recent book.
But I think she talked, I mean, they started in the mid-70s or mid-80s, didn't they, on their trip?
Oh, I guess.
Because she talked about Kevin Rudd and the cricket game and him being like the diplomat in China.
That's right.
So that was like a point for me that I went, okay, this was quite a long time ago.
Yes.
But it made me feel like that. But some of it did feel more recent.
And as far as I know, she is still an expat because we had someone say that they were in China with her a year or two ago. So I gather she still is. But, yeah, that makes a lot more sense. And you're right, I probably hadn't thought about it that way, that a lot of her anecdotes are from 15 years ago. But there were things, you know, I just wonder as time goes by whether they'll be seen as inappropriate. Do you know, like there was a phrase when she was talking about Christmas, she said, Europe is the only place that does Christmas properly. Everywhere else simply makes a dog's dinner out of it. I mean, she's so incredibly English.
To me that was an English thing.
Yeah, that was very English.
Yeah.
Yeah, but whereas I think now we've all become so PC that you wouldn't write that now. Do you know, it would seem inappropriate to suggest that other people should be doing Christmas, in inverted commas, properly.
Oh, see, I didn't think that. I just thought, oh, the Americans will be upset.
See, I guess I think of it in the Middle East. Christmas is a really big deal here in that we have National Day on December 17th and nothing else is really meant to be celebrated until National Day is done. And obviously this is a Muslim country, so Christmas Day isn't for locals, whereas it's really just for expatriates. So hotels here cannot decorate until after National Day. They can't put up the Christmas tree, they can't start talking about what they're going to do on Christmas Day or any of that until after National Day is done. And
oh, goodness, that's awesome.
Yeah.
The rest of the world could complain that Christmas starts in, like, September.
Yeah, and it would seem really culturally off to kind of demand that Christmas be done properly. So I guess maybe that's me. Like, I know, Nikki, you quite often use the phrase, oh, I don't know if I've been in America for too long, but I think, you know, this should look like this or this should look like that. I wonder if that's me too in the Middle East, is I've been in the Middle East for so long that I don't make any expectations about Western culture being visible.
I think that totally both of us look at everything through the lens of our own experiences, and our own experiences bring our own biases into play, because that's what we, you know, there is no such thing as like looking at something with no bias at all, because you use your own bias of your own experience. So I think that it's good that you say that, and I think a lot of people would like the idea that no one decorates till after the 17th of December. Someone told me that you don't decorate for Christmas till the 20th of December, and I was like, what? How can that be? As in, your house doesn't get decorated until the 20th of December.
And what are the rules for Halloween? When are you meant to start decorating for Halloween?
Oh, okay. So American holidays are fantastic. So they just all roll into each other. So once summer finishes, since they start doing those stupid pumpkin spice lattes at Starbucks, that's when Halloween comes out, and the cinnamon broomsticks and all that just ridiculous thing. Sorry, America, I love you, but I do not love pumpkin spice and cinnamon broomsticks. So Memorial Day is the start of summer, and then Labor Day is at the end of summer. Labor Day, you have to pack up all your white pants, all your white shoes, put them all away, can't get them back out till next summer. That's like an unwritten rule. And then after that, that's when you get out your decorations for Halloween. That is,
you should probably tell people when Labor Day is.
Yeah, so Labor Day is the first weekend in August. So it's still like 100 degrees in Georgia, or like in the high 30s for a whole another month and a half.
And are the women of Georgia still packing away their white pants even though it's still piping hot?
Traditionally. I do have some friends who are traditionalists and do that, but I also have other friends that say there's different rules in the South because the South is hotter for longer.
Right.
So it's you know, it can be a controversial topic, or it can just be me poking fun at people. So, you know. But then after that, you roll straight into your Halloween, and then while your Halloween's happening, you're planning your Thanksgiving. And so when Halloween decorations come down, Thanksgiving comes up. So you get your turkeys on your front door, your wreaths and all that kind of stuff. And then straight after Halloween, the day after Thanksgiving, there is massive, you just have to look in any sort of suburban area, there's massive activity. And the day after Thanksgiving, everyone's Christmas decorations go up.
Okay, so back to the book though. Would you recommend it? What was your feeling on it?
I mean, there were parts of it I related to because of I'd lived in the same places. So the Hong Kong thing, the thing where she said there were girls in beautiful party dresses doing a search on the beach, a scavenger hunt, and they were bringing back hypodermic needles and used condoms, and I felt that there. I was like, oh yeah, that sounds right. So things like that I related to, some of the stories about, you know, the Chinese people and the culture in general. But I found it difficult to read because I found it very choppy. I don't know, that kind of got in the way for me. And I think you said, like, it's not necessarily relatable, like talking about taking a car back or forward or between countries.
Yeah. Like when she was talking about shipping the car back to the UK, I found myself thinking, oh, only a diplomat would do that. Do you know anyone that has shipped their car back home?
Well, you know, a lot of people move home from countries that drive on a different side of the road. Mm. I know a lot of people that ship cars between Europe and the States because they all drive on the same side.
Right.
But yes, I mean, not a lot, like not everybody I know, but you know, I know some people that have done that. And I know that some companies include it as part of the move, like you can move a container and you can move a car if you want.
Oh, well, there you go. See, that's just something that's never popped up in my expat world, but it's obviously popped up in yours. Yeah, so for me, it seemed completely foreign. One of the things that didn't seem foreign, though, that I did get a good kick out of was when she was talking about their Filipino housekeeper who liked to discuss her female inner workings with her husband, and you know, the ebbing and flowing high and low tides. We had exactly the same situation in that when we lived in Canada, we had a fabulous nanny who was from the Philippines, and I don't know what it is in Filipina culture, but you talk about your period very openly with anyone at any time of the day. And I have noticed it in every country I've lived where I've had Filipino women in my life. It really is, everything's up for discussion when you want to talk about your period. And so I know with our nanny, once a month she used to need to have a day off because we were told in great graphic detail of how heavy her period was and that she'd be requiring a day off, of which my husband would just about go, yeah, okay, I'm coming home right away, because she would ring him to tell him, do you know, like,
now.
You'll have to come home now, Greg, because my period is very heavy. And Greg would just be like, okay, just stop. Please stop.
But I wonder if that, I mean, I think, and also, I wonder, is that us being very Western? You know, like, I just think it's English-speaking cultures, we don't talk about that kind of thing.
But a lot of other cultures, I mean, Filipinos, I hear what you're saying, but a lot of other cultures talk about more other things as well, more openly
yes.
than we
do. Oh, definitely, definitely. And, yeah, I remember we all went back to Australia via Hong Kong and we stopped at Disneyland and... And I'm not using her name because I'm protecting her her identity. But our very lovely nanny came with us and we sat down at the buffet for breakfast. And I said, oh, how did you sleep last night? And as we were all sitting there with a plate full of food, she said, oh, not good. My menstruasi arrived last night. Very heavy. Oh, blood everywhere. And Greg was sitting there with his eggs. He said, I'm out. Okay, I'm done. Who wants to go and look at the maze? And yeah, you're right. It's our Western sensibilities, isn't it? It's not just Filipino. There are many other cultures that very openly speak about these things, but we just don't, do we?
No. No, we don't. Anyway, we did ask a lot of people on the Two Fat Expat page and also on the Four Kids 20 Suitcases page about their own diplomatic incidents.
Oh, yes.
And there were some great ones.
Yeah, yeah. Now, do you want to kick off? I think you were looking at Charlotte.
Charlotte had a great story. So Charlotte was taken off a bus in rural Peru at a military checkpoint, and she was the only foreigner on the bus. She was a woman traveling alone and didn't hardly speak any Spanish, and they wanted to see her passport to register her in the new region that she was entering. But the problem was her passport was securely zipped into a secret pocket on the inside leg of her trousers. So all the soldiers are standing around and she had to start unzipping her trousers to produce the document. And they raised their guns and pointing them at her and very cautious about what she was doing. And then when she produced her passport, they smiled.
I really liked Susan Merriman, who said that they did attend a funeral thinking it was a cafe.
That was so funny. That was very funny. The other one was one where Alyssa Martinez said a friend of hers had been working on a project in Congo and entering or leaving the country was told by an immigration officer that he had to pay an admin fee, which was about 25 euros. So he paid the fee and then got arrested for bribery on the spot.
Oh, nice, nice.
There's some officials close by that were able to help him out. So, but that kind of thing doesn't surprise me too much.
Yeah. Now, Robin, who is in Kuala Lumpur, her and her family attended a Hari Raya celebration, which is a Muslim celebration. I had completely forgotten that it was Hari Raya. It's so good when people remind you of things you've done in countries
yes.
that you've forgotten about. Anyway, her husband was wearing his Big Man Triathlon T-shirt from a race that he'd done, and it had a big, large pink pig on the T-shirt. And obviously, pigs are a bit of a no-go zone when you're celebrating Muslim culture.
Yes.
Yes, I've known quite a few people who've had to remove Peppa Pig T-shirts from small children at different events where they've suddenly gone, oh, where am I?
We had a lot of there was a group of women in Houston that were arrested for jaywalking.
Oh, that's fantastic, that one. I actually think I was either there that night or it happened soon after me because I know Shari who posted that and she's talking about Lorna, who is quite infamous in Houston because she runs something called the Wednesday Morning Group. And Lorna's a real estate agent, but she, on the side, has had this ongoing group in Houston. I want to say that it's been going for, you know, 10 to 15 years of women who get together on Wednesday mornings. It's the most fantastic expat group. And if anyone wants details of it, I'll actually make sure we've got a link on the Two Fat Expats page. But yes, at her birthday, they all crossed the road, didn't they? And then were in trouble for jaywalking.
Well, we got in Hong Kong, when we first moved to Hong Kong, there was a lot of jaywalking tickets issued. It was like a favorite sport in one particular intersection downtown, and it was always expats or foreigners, people who weren't familiar, who would just like go off across the road and there'd be a little policeman standing smiling saying, do you have your passport? And we would say, what are you talking about?
And on that, there were a lot of expats talking about fines that sort of come close to payday. And I'd forgotten about this in Indonesia as well. We had Lisa who was in Indonesia, and she was saying that, you know, just before payday, when money was becoming a bit tight, maybe the police would suddenly start charging on the spot fines. In Indonesia, you notice that there's always bribes and fines and things that suddenly come out of nowhere. Oh, there's a charge for that. So that was a good one to remember. I loved Karma, who has been in Qatar, and she was talking about how she she got lost after making the school run, and unbeknown to them, they were driving up the same road that goes just by the Emir's palace, which is the king's place. And then all of a sudden there were all these military guys in Land Cruisers, and one of them came up to the car with his gun, and you can imagine, you just lost on the way home from the school run, and all of a sudden you're in a great diplomatic incident. She said that when they saw her son in the back sort of looking cute with his school uniform on, the guy turned around to his partner and said, it's okay, they're the good guys. And they were allowed to turn around.
Yes, there were lots of great stories. I have one of my own, which is when you go in and out of the US, it's very, I don't know, it's seen how a little bit more stressful at when you're in the immigration queues. I don't know, you just want to be right and say all the right things and whatever.
Yes.
So, and we always tell our kids, you know, because they hate queues, you know, and we're like, you just have to line up and you have to behave and just do what you're asked and don't answer any questions you're not asked, et cetera, et cetera. So we're at the front of the queue, and my son has a very unusual sense of humour, a very sort of, it's kind of a little bit more adult than kid sense of humour. And he was at the front of the queue, and we handed over our passports. Everything was going well, and the guy opened the passport and said, Zeke, is this you, young man? And Zeke leaned forward and whispered, help me. And just the horror that my husband and I were like, what? And we just were horrified as opposed to panicking. Like, we didn't panic. We just like, we're just so horrified. And this guy looked at us all and we're like, Zeke, oh my God. And we're like, what are you doing? And we're having this whole inter-family conversation. And I think he realized, and we were like seriously lucky, because child trafficking is a big deal, and it shouldn't be taken lightly. And I'm not trying to make fun of it, but I'm telling you, my son tried to make fun of it, and it wasn't funny at all. I was going to say, we also heard from Marnie this week on our leaving us a voice message.
Yes, yes. So Marnie had read the book, and she loved it, didn't she? And I have to say that has been the case, all the feedback about the book. I'm actually thinking majority of feedback about the book was all incredibly positive, and Marnie was the same. She had lots of great examples of what she enjoyed. And we've had a few voicemail messages, haven't we, from different people who all said the same thing, that they loved it. But Marnie's an Aussie in Singapore, and I'm going to get to meet Marnie next week when I'm in Singapore.
Yes, you are.
But Marnie was saying she loved the analogy that Cherry had drawn about shopping when you're back home and that whole thing. And I love that too. That's in that first paragraph, isn't it, about when you get back and you sort of, the supermarket is this absolute wonderland because you haven't seen those products for so long. And she loved how she talked about you kind of can't wait for your guests to go so you can get back into that, you know, walking around the house naked, but it was never as fun as you thought it would be. And she loved the teddy stories of keeping so many teddies to keep everything comfortable for the kids.
Basically, overall feedback, very good. Quite very funny, lots of relatable moments, which is basically all you can ask for in a book.
Yeah, yeah. Would you recommend it to a friend to read?
I think I'd recommend it to an expat friend. I don't think I'd recommend it to people who hadn't lived that kind of lifestyle. I don't think it necessarily can cross across everything.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think some people, do you think if you weren't an expat that some of you would find offensive or just boring or just unrelatable?
I think unrelatable. I think the offensive is more with time and that, you know, things that were considered okay to talk about then, say 20 to 25 years ago, necessarily, like we talked about the Christmas and that kind of thing.
Mm.
I think, you know, if you look at books like that all the time, there are things in books that are written a long time ago that you would think are never written now.
Yes.
I mean, if you've ever read The Magic Faraway Tree.
Yes.
And how the children, the mother has to do all the things in the house, and I'm reading the book to my children going, no, no.
The father's kind of non-existent in The Magic Faraway Tree, isn't he?
But the mother's always having to iron or make the dinner or something. I don't know. Anyway, so yes, I think it's relatable for people that have lived that kind of life, as in lived in different countries, in different cultures, and had that kind of experience.
Have you read many expat books? Because I haven't read a lot of expat books, and I'm wondering, I'm not sure if I would. I think it's funny, and I think it's a light-hearted, anecdotal, easy flip through kind of read. But I'd be interested to read a few more expat books now, to sort of, you know, yes, gain some perspective. But I did find that Cherry's Diplomat Expat Life is very different from my expat life. Like, I just can't compare them. And you know, even when we lived in Libya, which was probably more a little bit of that diplomat world, you know, because I think when you're in a smaller community and it's a tougher location, I think, yeah, there tends to be more of those dinner parties and events and those sorts of things. But I think if you're an expat in a reasonably kind of suburban expat world, you're not living that expat life.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. So on that note, while we don't intend every book to be expat related, we did put out a call out to see what kind of books people would like to read next month.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I came down to two books that we couldn't choose between, which was The Disobedient Wife by Annika Stanley, and the other one was The Expatriates by Janice Y.K. Lee. And we just put up a poll on the Two Fat Expats, and I think you shared it on the Four Kids 20 Suitcases page before we started recording the podcast, to say that we were going to poll people while we were recording. So there's a live poll going on right now to see which we choose next month. And at the moment, I know, at the moment we're at 71% for The Disobedient Wife and 29% for The Expatriate. So I think we're probably going to end up with The Disobedient Wife, but we will come back to that, but at the very, very end to make sure.
Yeah, look, I'm more than happy to do The Disobedient Wife. I was kind of hedging that way. Do you know what I mean? That was my choice. Yes.
Perfect.
Yes.
And it looks like we might be able to get in contact with the author of The Disobedient Wife, so that would be awesome.
Fantastic. All right, good, good, good. And, of course, we couldn't get in contact with Cherry. I did put a note out to her publishers, but I didn't get a response. And I did try and track Cherry down, and someone gave me a telephone number in China, which I rang several times, but no luck. Okay, so no. Tell me, social media, podcasts, reading, what have you been doing?
Okay, so I have been reading After You by Jojo Moyes, which she's the author of Me Before You, which we just talked about the movie recently.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, Me Before You was launched in Germany as Ein ganzes halbes Jahr, which means a whole half year. So I guess there was no translation of Me Before You. It just seems quite strange.
Yeah.
Always interesting to note.
So is After You a sequel to Me Before You?
After You is a sequel to Me Before You.
Yes. Wow.
So actually, I didn't know if I was going to enjoy it as much, but in the end, I actually really did. So it's got some twists and turns, and I quite enjoyed it. It didn't get as great a review as Me Before You, but I think I enjoyed it just as much in the end, I'd have to say.
Okay, well, I am reading Big Little Lies by Leanne Moriarty. And I was fascinated this week because everything I hear about Leanne Moriarty, people just sing her praises constantly. But that is, I've realised, the podcasts that I've listened to that are Australian or people with an Australian influence who have absolutely loved her. And I was really interested that one of our readers on Four Kids, 20 Suitcases or Two Fat Expats, I can't remember, well, I think Marsha's on both, but she was saying she'd read it in her international book group and that they had quite a few issues with it. So I was really interested to hear that.
Yeah, I loved Big Little Lies, and I read it in inverted commas with my fingers. You can't see me on Audible, which means that it was an Australian voice artist, an Australian actress reading it.
Right.
So I loved that she spoke with an Australian accent, and I loved the little things that were Australian about it. You know, the mention of the eucalyptus trees and just the explaining of the beaches and all that kind of stuff. So I really loved all that about it because I was living in America and I was listening to it. But we read it in our book club in America and loads of people said, oh, God, this could be our elementary school. You know, this could be right here. Like, I know all these people. They kind of enjoyed it and found it relatable. So that's interesting that other people don't necessarily feel that way.
So you think in your book group in America that they just were able to see past the Australianism and still relate?
Yeah, in fact, they didn't even seem to notice the Australianisms necessarily. I noticed them because they were put in there. Do you know what I mean? So they didn't seem to notice that. Like, no one said, hey, what was that or whatever.
Yeah.
I just really loved that they were there. So it's interesting. I think it's interesting.
Yeah, I'm really, really enjoying it. And I'm already busting to sort of find out what happened. Someone's told me that that is Leanne Moriarty's stick. She sort of does that all of her novels have you having to read furiously on to try and find out what it was that happened.
And she does, and I'm so bad at looking ahead. She does that, and I'm so bad at looking ahead. So with me listening to things on Audible, it's so much better because I can't look ahead. I have to listen as it goes, and it drives me insane. I just did her Truly Madly Guilty book last week or the week before. And I was like, I'm going to turn it off. If I can't find out what happened, I'm going to turn it off in a minute. I'm going to turn it off. But I just kept listening and listening and listening. And it just, I really did not enjoy it until I could find out what happened. I didn't enjoy the book. And then after I found out what happened, I enjoyed the book. It was so strange.
Wow. So if you read the book, like did you in Big Little Lies, did you go ahead and read it and then go back?
No, because I listened on Audible.
Oh, so that's right, you did. It. Yes, sorry, I was thinking about Truly Madly Guiltily. Oh, so you've done both of them on Audible.
Yeah, I'm a big Audible person because like when I'm cooking or in the kitchen or cleaning the house or whatever, I have to have something else to distract me so I don't get bored.
Yep.
I call it my adult onset ADD. So, and you know, when you're out on the train, walking, going into town, all that kind of stuff, I just have one earbud in my ear and I just walk around and listen. It's excellent. I enjoy it.
And what are you watching at the moment?
Well, I got my Hulu back up and running this week. So I've caught up on my Greys and How to Get Away with Murder and all my serial bad TV. But also yesterday I saw a new Holderness Family video. Do you know the Holderness Family? They're an American family that do sort of have a YouTube channel.
Yes.
Okay. So yesterday there was one about homework wine pairings, which is very funny.
I saw it. I did see it. Yeah. I'm not a fan of the Holderness Family, but I did enjoy that one. I thought it was very funny. We'll have to make sure we have that one on the website. Now, I have a new podcast obsession this week.
Yes, I'm interested.
Oh, my gosh, I'm absolutely loving this. It's called Phoebe's Fall, and it's the story of Phoebe Handsjuk, who was found at the bottom of a garbage chute in a luxury apartment building in Melbourne. And this story is a few years old, and I can sort of vaguely remember it when it happened, but I didn't know all the detail behind it. So what it is two journalists from The Age have made this podcast, and they've made it very similarly to the style of Serial, where there is thing, who went out with a very much older man whose name is Ant Hampel. And the Hampels are this well-known family in Melbourne. The father is a judge, as is the stepmother, I believe, and they're people that you would see on the society pages, and they had a lot of money and power. And how the podcast begins is you hear that this woman, this Phoebe Handschuk, was found at the bottom of a garbage chute. So I think the apartment was up on about the 12th floor, and the police have decided that she committed suicide, that she climbed up into this garbage chute and travelled down 12 floors. And what actually happened was she went through the garbage compactor at the end. I know. It's a really gruesome story that she was still alive having been going through that, but she actually died through loss of blood loss because of injuries that were sustained. It's quite gruesome in that she, her right foot was just about completely severed, and that's where they think she lost all the blood from that eventually killed her. But, of course, there is all the story behind the story, because if you were to believe the story of the boyfriend and the boyfriend's family, it would be that she drank and took drugs and that she was depressed and that she obviously committed suicide. But if you were to listen to her family, and she has a grandfather who was a detective, so he's very involved in this podcast, and if you listen to the cleaner and you listen to anyone that works within these garbage chutes, they'll tell you that there's no way she could have crawled in there, that it was just too tiny and it would have been too impossible and that this just doesn't happen. So it's really fascinating. It's a really, really good podcast and a really fascinating story. So it's called Phoebe's Fall, and I think they're up to about episode 4, and it's great. I just can't wait for the next one to come out, and I'm fascinated. But remember last week I mentioned Catastrophe. Well, we've on season 2 of that.
Best show ever. I'm done. I've watched both series. I'm done.
It is really, really good, isn't it? I just love it. I love everything about it.
Yeah, I'm done. It is so amazingly funny. It is so good.
Okay, so in terms of podcasts, I'm still listening to political podcasts about the US, only a couple of weeks to go. Keeping it 1600 is political and all about the US election, and which I'm still loving.
So who kind of, when it's a political one like Keeping It 1600, are they completely balanced or are they swaying one way?
There's just no, I mean, I cannot find, I don't think, any balanced coverage of the US election. It all slants one way or another. And I read and listen and look at a lot of stuff, but I just think there is no balanced reporting of the US election.
The thing that's amazed me with this election is I've asked every American friend, who do you think's going to win? And this was sort of up until last weekend, and they've all still said, I don't know. It really worries me that anything could happen.
And I think that's true. I mean, I think anyone can win. I mean, I have a friend who is the mother of two small daughters. She is very conservative, very Southern, and Sam and I were talking at dinner the other night, and he said, she's surely still not voting for Trump, you know, after everything that's happened. And I said, oh, she totally is. He said, how do you know that? I said, because I know, because it is. And there are people, I mean, Georgia, where I come from is a red state. And, but this year it might be purple, which means it's in play. So it means that it's got a possibility of swinging Democrat, because of course Jimmy Carter was from Georgia and he was president. So it used to be a blue state and then it became a red state.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And now it's purple. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, I love all that sort of stuff. Okay. Yeah. So now you've got a trip coming up. You're off tomorrow?
Tomorrow morning, Airbnb results pending. Yes, we're going to Amsterdam for 2 nights. So if anyone has any tips, send them in. And and then we're going to Rotterdam for 1 night to see a whole load of, hopefully a whole load of Dutchy friends who are friends from South Africa, but they've all now moved back to Holland. Or as my daughter said, call it the Netherlands. I don't like Holland. I was like, okay, will do.
Now, I know where you're not going next week, Nikki Moffat.
No, that's where you're going, Kirsty Rice.
Oh, I so wish you were coming with me.
Me too.
So I'm off to Singapore. I hop on the plane, I think, very early Monday morning. I'll be in Singapore late Monday night, ready for our lunch on Tuesday, our big fat expat meetup.
That's super exciting, and there is still tickets available, but only until Friday, and we absolutely have to give final numbers on Friday. So if you're thinking about buying a ticket and you're going to be in Singapore next Tuesday, sign up now at ticketx.com.
Okay, and you just have to look under the little events tab that's under Two Fat Expats. We've got a little events tab that sort of says what we've got going on. And the whole idea of this lunch is it's meant to be for expat women to connect and find each other and be warm and fuzzy and encompassing and lovely and making everybody, you know, get to know each other. So if you are new in Singapore or you've just lost a lot of friends because, you know, you're on the rotation of your ins and out and whatever, come along. And we've got, I think now, about 45 women so far.
Yes, very exciting. And have you decided what you're going to write?
Yes, I think I'm, because I haven't actually written it yet, but I think I'm going to write a letter to my brand new expat self.
Awesome. That will be very good. Are you sure that's not a whole book there, Kirsty?
Okay, so on books, book suggestions for next month, what was the final poll? What are we going with?
Okay, good point. The final poll is, let me just check it. The final poll is clear-cut winner to The Disobedient Wife by Annika Stanley. I know that was a secret favourite of yours. And I will say we will put the link to Amazon or whatever on the site, but be careful if you're going out there looking for it yourself. There is some different genres of books that are also called The Disobedient Wife. Just saying. Just putting that out there.
Does she have like a whip in her mouth and she's on all fours?
Oh, there's a whole, yes, there is some of that out there. It's quite a few titles under The Disobedient Wife, but we're looking for a very, very apparently, well, I don't know if it's G-rated, but it's fictional, but it's of a possible, no, it's about a woman living in Tajikistan, is that correct?
Yeah. I think, now, you don't pronounce the J, do you? So it's Tajikistan, is that it? Maybe someone's going to have to tell us. But it's about an expat woman who's in one of the stans, isn't she? And it sounded really interesting, but it's still going along the expat lines, but it's also the person who's living in her house as well, isn't there? I think it's her housekeeper. Yeah, so it compares the expat and the housekeeper and what their life is like in Tajikistan.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry, everybody. I apologize to all the Tajikistanis for my incorrect pronunciation.
I might have it really, really, really wrong, I think.
I don't really know, because I have spent my whole life saying Tanzania.
And you've just found out it's Tanzania. I know.
No, it's not. It's not. South Africans call it Tanzania. And so when I went there, because I don't know if I've ever told you, I've climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, which is in fact in Tanzania. And I asked them, I was like, guys, how do you say it? And they said, Tanzania. So I went back to educate South Africans.
Wow, because I'm the same. I've always called it Tanzania. And then it wasn't until Doha when I was around a lot of South Africans and they were all saying Tanzania. And, yes, I, like you, took them at their word that they would know better
because they live on the same continent.
And the weird thing is one of those people worked in Tanzania and was calling it Tanzania.
T- Tanzania is, I don't know, maybe it's a pronunciation to do with the Afrikaans accent. I'm not sure, but I was in Tanzania and I said, please tell me how to. And as far as I could tell, he said to me, Tanzania. So I'm going
with
that.
Was this just one person, though, that you asked, or did you ask more than one? Well,
it was the guide of our trip, so he was a local. So I just assumed that he had a good grasp.
Because I'm just wondering if he just wanted to make you happy.
good point.
That is like, oh, good point. We'll just make it whatever you want it to be.
Because I'd just given him a tip. I don't know. No, anyway, it could be, but I hope not. But okay, I'm sorry, everybody, but I swear the rest of the world says one thing and South Africans say another. I'm just saying.
All right, well, Nikki, I will talk to you from Singapore next week when we record next Wednesday. And next Wednesday you'll be back in, where are you, Hamburg?
I'm back in my dining room in Hamburg. Yep.
And we'll be talking about when you love your expat location but your children hate it. And we're going to be interviewing a fantastic expat woman who is in Hong Kong, and she's got an amazing job there. They've actually gone there for her job, which she's thoroughly enjoying, and her husband is really enjoying it as well. But they have the issue of kids can't stand it.
Yeah, that's very difficult. And I guess they're older kids rather than younger kids.
Actually, I would still consider one young, like as young as my youngest. But, yeah, both haven't liked it. But anyway, we can talk about that more next week. Okay, have a great week.
You too. Bye-bye.